violon. Salut à toi les Morocons, salut à toi le Yougoslave, salut à toi le voyou slave, salut à toi le Salvador, salut à toi le Molodoy, salut à toi le Chinois, salut à toi le Zaïrois, salut à toi l'Espagnol, salut à toi le Ravachol, salut à toi le Hongrois, salut à toi l'Iroquois, salut aussi à tous les Gosses, des îles maudites jusqu'à l'Écosse, salut à vous tous les Azous, salut à la jeune garde rouge, salut à toi le peuple corse, salut aux filles du Crésor, salut à toi la vache chérie, salut à Lorraine et Arthur, salut à toi peuple nomade, salut à tous.
You are listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is the special twice-a-year episode where the Healthy Living Hour joins with Our Changing Environment with Jono Miller and Julie Morris. So we collaborate together on a combined show that covers just health, wellness topics of both people health and environmental health. My name is Rebecca Acosta, acupuncture physician, and I am your host. A huge thanks here to our soundboard operator, Julie Morris. Thank you for running the board today. Our goal is to offer a wide variety of topics and guests to better inform and educate our community on current health and wellness issues. As a disclaimer, everything said here today is uncensored, can be extremely diverse, and does not necessarily reflect the views of WSLR nor their staff or volunteers. Further, no one here is providing any type of medical diagnosis, treatment, nor advice. Everything said here on the Healthy Living Hour is solely for general information and to foster critical thinking. We encourage you to consult your doctor for personal medical advice. Again, we are here live at WSLR with Jono Miller and Julie Morris. And on our combined show today, as we talk about environmental impacts as well as on the health as well. And today is the last day of our fund drive, our membership drive. And this is where we ask for listener support. We wouldn't be here if it weren't for people like you contributing anything you have and you're willing to give to keep us on the air for our little low-power community radio station. And community radio stations are such a rare thing. There's only about four or five of us in the whole state of Florida. And, you know, we promote community and diversity, and everything, again, is uncensored. There's commercial free. You're not bombarded with pharmaceutical commercials or anything of that nature. Where else can you get something like this? WSLR in Fogartyville, it's such a treasure here in this community. And I just wanted to say, I was here last night after work, answering phones and helping out. And I wanted to shout out to our newest volunteer, Nancy. If you're listening, thank you so much for coming for the first time and answering phones last night. So to start off, I'm going to pass this to Julie Morris, and we have some donations, and we'd like to do a few shout outs here. Here you go, Julie. Thank you.
Yes, we'd like to thank Sarah Stovall. She made a contribution of $120, the supporter level, and she wants to claim a Many Voices, One Community t-shirt. Also, we have a donation from Anonymous in Sarasota. This is an Evergreen membership, $20 a month, fan club, in support of everything at WSLR in Fogartyville. We also have an anonymous donation of $25 each for three different programs: news, Art Beat, Cats Meow. And we have an anonymous donation from Sarasota, $60 for Art Beat, and Dr. Laura in Mercer Island, Washington, at the $40 listener level in support of Fogartyville. We want to thank all of those people for their contributions. Today is the last day of our fund drive, and we are really encouraging everybody to contribute today. There's a special challenge from 7 till 10 a.m., and this is the last hour of that challenge. The Jane Family Foundation has a $1,000 challenge up for grabs during Corduroy, Our Changing Environment, and the Healthy Living Hour. We need 30 individual donations to make it happen. So let's rally early and start strong. So if you want to make a donation, you can call the office number at 941-894-6469, or you can log on to WSLR.org and hit the donate button. And we would really appreciate your contributions today. Our guest today is Rick Kirby. He's a senior scientist at the local Climate Adaptation Center. He's a meteorologist who has spent the recent decades educating the public about weather and climate. We are talking with him today about the intersection of climate and health, which was the focus of a two-day conference last week sponsored by the Climate Adaptation Center. So let's see. The topics covered at the conference included how to reduce the medical exposure to heat. And one of the suggestions at the conference was how to develop a local heat action plan. And then there was another panel discussion about tropical diseases and how they are moving northward as the climate warms. And then there was a mental health panel that talked about how climate warming and the climate crisis is affecting the mental health of people everywhere in the world. And then there was a session about migration patterns, which was about how people either are hurricane refugees, tropical weather refugees, or wildfire refugees moving northward in order to escape the climate crisis. And so those are the things that we'll be talking with Rick about today.
Great. Yes, thank you, Julie. And it's just so good to be together. I look forward to these every year. It's about the only time we, you know, our paths cross here at the station. It's a rare thing. What I wanted to say, a quick public service announcement, is Acupuncturists Without Borders. So we have Doctors Without Borders. Many people know about that organization. They do wonderful things throughout the world. In the U.S. here, we have Acupuncturists Without Borders. And my clinic, Natural Primary Care, is hosting their community acupuncture. It's just donation-based. If you're able to give a donation, there's no questions. It's for stress, trauma, whatever you may have. If you haven't tried acupuncture before, we are here to support the community. We've had these storms, recent election stuff. You know, I think we all could say we're just a little bit more stressed and we're all a little maybe more edgy. I know I am. But anyway, that is held. I've got three more days at Natural Primary Care, located at 2055 Wood Street, Suite 200 in Sarasota. And we will do this, a group of us get together and join there to provide acupuncture, community acupuncture, from 10 to 1 today, Thursday, and next Tuesday. And so if you're interested, please grab the opportunity. And more information can be received by calling 941-209-8105. Again, 10 to 1 today, Thursday, and next Tuesday. We ask that the last patient, the latest we'll take somebody is if you arrive at 12:15. So please, if you know of anybody who could benefit that from that, please share the word. And Julie, if I may say, talking about climate change, Chinese medicine fits with this so perfectly, talking about the state of our health, right? If we look at things, the whole body, in terms of nature, if you think about it. If something's too cold, we warm it up. Think about if you're in a grocery store and you just feel too cold, or a restaurant or somewhere, or even just outside, or you know that your body's getting, you know, the temperature is changing and you just don't acclimate like you used to. That's a Chinese medicine thing, and we work on that. Likewise, if something's too hot inside of us, we cool it down. And I could give an example of arthritis. Some people with their arthritis, they have a more cold condition, so they move here to Florida because they like that warm, you know, the warmth helps them. That's a thing. And likewise, some people don't do well here because their arthritis or pathology might be more of a damp heat condition. And so they prefer the cooler weather. So it never just fits one category. We really do this pattern discrimination and break it down further. And we are seeing more of these things. We're seeing more mental health issues, you know. And we also say a Chinese statement of fact that heat rises and it harasses the mind. It harasses the spirit. And we see this, you know, if we get too hot, it's got to go somewhere if it's inside. And it's kind of an energetic thing, but this is what we are witnessing, and we're all witnessing more of this here in Florida. So thank you, and it's just good, and I can't wait for our guests to arrive and give us more information.
Okay, so we have some more people to thank. Joan in Sarasota made a contribution at the $60 friend level. Jacqueline Roller made a contribution of $120 at the supporter level, and she's supporting WSLR News, Community Conversation with Mel, Democracy Now!, and Voices Up. And then we have an anonymous contribution from Sarasota, and they ordered a brick on the People's Patio here at Fogartyville and WSLR. I want to remind everybody that the legislature passed a bill this year, and the governor signed it, that prohibits any local heat protection, any local government heat protection measures from being enacted. And that was based on the influence of the construction industry, and the farm workers, the agriculture industries, because they didn't want to provide shade and water breaks in order for their workers to recover from heat if they were having heat stroke. That is something that the legislature passed and the governor signed this particular year. So no longer will local governments be able to have heat action plans that are required of the construction industry and agricultural workers in the future in Florida until we can overturn that law, which just seems like it's a real anti-humanity, anti-worker kind of thing.
Yeah, Julie, especially with, I notice being here for the last few summers, these last two summers, maybe a third, I don't know, everything's a bit scrambled, but we've had record heat in the summertime. We've had heat indexes, dangerous ones. So it doesn't make sense to me. How can this possibly be?
And, you know, you think about people who are doing roofing work in the hot time of the year, they are completely covered up. They're wearing hats, and they need breaks. They need water, and they need a time to sit down in the shade and recover from the heat. We're looking forward to Rick Kirby arriving soon. He has been in traffic, and he is delayed in his arrival. And he's going to, again, share with us the results from the Climate Adaptation Center's conference last week that had to do with climate and health. And we thought that was the perfect topic for our joint fundraising show today.
Yeah, really looking forward to this conversation with him, Julie. Thank you so much. Again, if you're just tuning in, this is the Healthy Living Hour and Our Changing Environment on our fall membership drive. And just a few shout outs. We have some pre-show donations for the Healthy Living Hour. Our very own near and dear Arlene Sweeting, sending love from Michigan. Thank you so much, Arlene and Dave. I think I can speak for us all. We all miss you dearly, but we know you got great things to do up there. Andrew Hudson in Bradenton joined as an Evergreen member, $10 a month. Thanks so much, Andrew. You've had him on your program as a guest. He's just an extraordinary human being. He's one of my favorite people here locally. And thank you all for your support, for your donations, your contributions. You know, we are all spokes of the same wheel here at WSLR, here at Fogartyville, here in Sarasota and Bradenton. You know, it's about community. We need to come together and we need to support all good things here. And there's a lot, you know, we want everybody included. And, you know, what a great place where we, you know, everything is uncensored. We can have diverse conversations. We can say things on air that you don't hear anywhere else for many reasons. And so, you know, I can't think of a better thing to foster in this community. I heard it at one of the film viewings over the summer here. One of the film directors kind of said, she made a comment and it stuck with me. She said, I have my biological family and then I have my logical family. And I love my family. I love my family dearly. But this is really family to me. We share common vision, interest, hopes for our community, hopes for the people. We want everybody to do well because we all do well when everyone is doing well. We don't want to see anyone suffering. So again, let's just talk about you know, some heat things with environmental changes that are affecting us. I know from that conference, one of the talking points was that heat stroke is the deadliest weather phenomenon in the U.S. I did not know that. And we are really embarking on the edge of a catastrophe. It's a thing. So, we need water, but when we sweat out, we lose minerals. And so, you know, we all think maybe Gatorade is a great electrolyte. Well, it used to be back in the early 90s or 80s, but they added so much sugar to Gatorade. So that's kind of a thing to be cautious with from a holistic health aspect. But there are many ways you can make your own electrolytes. You can, people can use sea salt, like the Celtic salt, you know, something that's not been refined. It's not white. It almost looks like dirt, or that pink Himalayan salt. Those are more rich with the alkalizing minerals. And you can put a little chunk of salt or a teaspoon of salt in a jar, mason jar of just good, clean drinking water. And then every day, if you're out in the heat during the summer, it's cooled down now, but this is more pertinent to summertime when it's really hot. You can just take a spoonful of that, a teaspoon, put it in, you know, your bigger container of drinking water, and that will give you, that will replenish some of those alkalizing minerals. So that's just kind of a little DIY health tip for those who do work outside, you know. And like Julie said, we're kind of aghast that some of this legislation was passed. We have a lot of workers out here that work outside, that are in the heat, that are working on the farms, that are working on the roofs, and it's dangerous. And I'm concerned that it's going to be more dangerous. So, Julie, back to you.
Yeah, we have another contribution coming in. Robin Russell, $50, and she likes everything at WSLR. And we also have another anonymous contribution of $100, and they also love everything. So, Rick, it's so good to have you here.
Hi.
I'm sorry that whatever your commute was difficult. Can you hear?
I think so. Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. So my commute, yeah, I mean, it's every day in Florida these days, right? And I live in northern Manatee County, so it's unbelievable. Sometimes it can take an hour. Today was about an hour and 10 minutes to get from right around 75 and 275 to here in downtown Sarasota. So, you know, you just try to enjoy it and take that time and not stress out too much. But, yeah, so great to be here, guys.
Thank you for braving that traffic.
So, Rick, we wanted you to join us today to talk about climate and health based on the conference that the Climate Adaptation Center hosted just last week.
Yeah, I'm still tired over that. It was a two-day conference, and then, of course, all of the work to set that up was just months and a good part of the year. And we're already, Bob Bunting, the CEO, already has us now on our next event, which is going to be the Climate Champions Award, which kind of celebrates people that are doing great things for our climate. But yeah, so back to the conference, it was so interesting. I mean, we had doctors not only, you know, from Sarasota Memorial Hospital. We had come over from Miami. We had people come from national places. The Vice President of the U.S. Federal Reserve Bank in Atlanta was down here to talk about climate migration, which is really interesting because people are migrating because of the climate. They're migrating here in Sarasota County because they're going from, say, the Barrier Islands to higher ground, you know, inland. And then people are also going north. People are coming north from other countries. So there's a lot of climate migration going on, too. But the health thing I thought was really, really interesting, from things like, you know, vector-borne diseases. And so what's a vector? A vector is like a mosquito. That's the biggest one, or a tick. And what happens is with warmer weather, they're getting longer seasons. Mosquitoes are being seen where they've never been seen before. Higher altitudes, they saw it, like saw mosquitoes at 9,000 feet in Colorado this year, which is not normal. And then the seasons of mosquitoes are getting longer. And if you live in Florida, you'd love to hear that. You know, we can't wait for mosquito season in, which is normally, you know, like a spring to early November thing. But those are getting, extended even more now. And then the population of and the reproduction cycle of them, and also the parasites that live in some of those that bring these diseases, are more active as well. So anyway, these vectors, like mosquitoes, they have their blood meal in an infected animal or an infected human, and then in their next blood meal could ingest that into you. And that's how you pick up something like dengue fever or malaria. And we're seeing these numbers start to increase, a lot of dengue fever this year. And so that's one impact of climate warming a lot of people don't think about, and maybe don't even completely understand, the vector-borne diseases and waterborne diseases too. Warmer water, we're seeing stuff like Vibrio, the flesh-eating disease, is becoming more of an issue. And that's kind of scary when that, you know, I mean, it doesn't always have an extreme outcome, but it can. And we've seen deaths due to it this year in Florida, and I think it's 8 or 9 is the running total so far. So that's a serious threat. And there's just so many things to think about with human health. We don't cool down at night as much anymore, so we don't have that reset cycle. Buildings don't cool down. Urban heat islands, like downtown Sarasota, they just don't have that chance to cool down. And so we start the days even warmer, and we just continue this vicious hot cycle. And that can take a toll on our health as well, because we have health concerns with the heat, right? Just the heat alone. And so that can... Here we go. That sounds better. I think I had my mic or my headphones weren't plugged in all the way. But anyway, that is a concern. And it just goes on and on. These things we're finding that are an increasing threat with a warmer climate in health. And doctors are learning more about this. They're seeing more issues with their patients. And this is something they don't really teach in medical school. Some schools are starting to introduce climate, but it's still not a lot. There are some schools that are starting to require physicians to be trained in climate and maybe take, you know, a certain amount of classes in climate, so they're at least aware of what's going on with the climate. And so there are a lot of new terms that we're seeing. You know, mental health is a big one, and that's a really big one to talk about here, because, you know, we just had, you know, back-to-back incredible hurricanes with Helene and Milton. We had Debbie before that. We had one physician from Sarasota Memorial Hospital. His house flooded in Debbie, in Helene, and in Milton, all three times. So, I mean, stuff like that's devastating, and that takes a toll on people. It is causing some people to experience PTSD, anxiety, depression, and, you know, we have found that there's even higher rates of suicide for people that experience some of these things. And, you know, if you're affluent, they're still tough. But if you're not, they can be devastating if you just don't have the money to do what you have to do. I mean, you can lose your home. So, you know, people are being displaced by these events. And you know, these are all triggered by what we're seeing with the warmer climate. Many people have never heard of rapid intensification. That's kind of a nerdy meteorology term. But now I would say most people have heard that term, because it's starting to become common, because the water temperature, so sea surface temperatures are so warm. Heading into this hurricane season, we already had record temperatures in the Atlantic and in the Gulf. And this is before, you know, the warm season. So that's like rocket fuel for these hurricanes. Warm water, it needs warm water. Hurricanes need, you know, low levels of wind shear up high so it doesn't disrupt the storms too much. It needs plenty of atmospheric moisture. And so in a warmer climate, we tend to have these things. Wind shear can be something that varies, but with the La Nina coming out of an El Nino last year, a La Nina tends to bring less wind shear, and that's why we expected such an active hurricane season this year. And you know, maybe we could have seen, it took a while to get it going. Maybe if we were not fortunate in that degree, maybe we would have had even more. But the ones we saw, almost all seem to have rapid intensification. And, you know, for our area, we're all historic. I mean, we've seen flooding like we've never seen here before.
Can you explain wind shear to our listeners?
Yeah, basically, wind shear is just a change in wind speed or direction as you go up into the atmosphere. So wind shear, it can, you know, also trigger things like tornadoes. A change in direction and wind speed can cause rotation. But from a hurricane's aspect, as you go up, a change in speed and direction like that can tilt the storm. And when a hurricane becomes tilted, it becomes less organized and it can weaken it. So if a hurricane's coming your way, of course, you want to hear it's going to encounter some wind shear and probably weaken. And if you hear the opposite. It's going into a favorable environment. There's not a lot of wind shear, and there's a lot of moisture. It's not dry air. Yeah. Then we're concerned about it developing. And then when you look at the sea surface temperatures, when they're really warm like they've been, now we get really concerned about rapid intensification. That's when these things can blow up from just a tropical storm to a major Cat 3 or higher hurricane, sometimes in 24, 36 hours. It's absolutely incredible.
You are listening to WSLR 96.5 in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. And we are in our fundraising week.
The last day.
The last day of our fundraising week. And we have a special challenge before 10 a.m. today. The Jane Family Foundation has a $1,000 challenge up for grabs during this show, ending at 10 o'clock. And we need 30 individual donations to make it happen. Let's rally early and start strong. So we have two contributions to acknowledge here. Rana Bazzini, a $25 pledge, keeping up the good work. Love you. Stu Wilson is contributing at the $120 supporter level. And we thank both Stu and Rana for their contributions today.
So, Julie, do we know how many, how we're doing on that count to get to the $1,000?
No, we do not.
Okay. Well, so we have a half hour to get an unknown number of contributions to unlock this $1,000. So if you've been considering, whether it's this show or others, this is the time to call to help make that $1,000 happen.
Yeah. Good morning, everybody, and thank you. Thank you for joining us, Rick.
Right. Yeah, and, that's right.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I found this, too, talking about the mosquitoes and stuff. I was looking, and I'm sure you're already aware of this, Julie, but I saw an article that we lost 10 species of birds, mainly particular in Hawaii, in 2023 because of the uptick of those malaria-causing mosquitoes.
Yeah, and we call that biodiversity loss. And we're seeing a lot of weird things like sea turtles here. When the temperature hits a certain level, we tend to get one offspring, male or female. And I believe it was mostly male in the past year because of temperatures hitting a threshold. So these are things you could never imagine. And so it really stresses our biodiversity, and there's so many things like that are going to be affected. And, you know, if you don't understand kind of what's going on, I'll give you a quick breakdown. By the way, my name's Rick Kirby. I have spent most of my career in television, last working for 10 Tampa Bay, the CBS station in Tampa. So my biggest concern right now is, are these headphones messing up my great TV hair?
Kidding. I think you're good.
I'm kidding. Kind of. A quick breakdown. It's really important. I don't know how we are on time, but it's really important that I think we give climate a voice, and that means that you care about it, you talk about it. And I know it's hard because it's been such a polarizing political issue, and it doesn't matter where you come politically. That's all good because it's not a political thing. It's kind of like if cancer became political. Well, it doesn't matter. We're all people, and so we're all affected by it. And I think we're in a good place with talking about climate because studies continue to show now America is about two-thirds are experiencing it. They are believing it. There may be some discrepancy, but what people think is causing it. We've heard all kinds of objections and challenges from people. And you see memes and things on the internet. You don't know. Here's the problem. You don't know what to believe, who to believe. People don't trust their local news anymore because everything's political, and that's a shame. So try to take that out of this and just kind of look at what's going on, because you're certainly feeling it here. All really anywhere has got their own issues, but look at the record temperatures, the record years, the record summer. This last year was the hottest year for the planet ever recorded. And guess what's going to happen this year? We're going to break it. almost a 97% chance at this point we're going to break it. So it's absolutely crazy. But if you look at it, I mean, people can say, well, the Earth has always had climatic cycles. True, but nothing like we're seeing now. It could be solar cycles. That's not something NASA's seen. And I know you can take a conspiracy theory and say, well, every TV weather person and every person at NASA's fake. That's not happening, guys. So, you have to look at what happened. And so if you go to pre-industrial, you heard of the Paris Climate Agreement 2015, hoping to keep things by the end of the century down to no more than 2 degrees above pre-industrial levels, which is like 1850 to 1900. And we are now, and ideally it would be 1.5 degrees Celsius above, but no more than two. And we've already seen, I think it's 1.62 right now, which is incredible. And we got a ways to go until 2100.
Yeah, and one of the points that a speaker made at the conference last week was that we have hurricane warnings starting like 3 or 4 days out and watches and then eventually a warning, but that with heat wave, we don't really have any system to alert people that there's life-threatening heat coming towards us. And I think there was a speaker at the Climate and Health Conference who was based in Thailand, maybe, and she was saying public education is a really an important part about heat because people don't realize the symptoms of when they're getting hot and when they need to ask for medical assistance.
And we did talk about that a little bit at the Human Health Conference, and a doctor said that, one of the big symptoms is when you're about to have a heat stroke, you stop sweating. Your body's given up at that point. So that is definitely a big clue. And you got to watch that heat index because you can download charts, the heat index charts, and look at the danger zone. You don't want to be in that danger zone. And it's a really simple chart. You just look at the dew point temperature and the actual temperature, and it shows you what that it feels like to your body and what happens. Because your body cools itself by sweating. And so that's why when it gets humid outside, the sweat clings to you. It can't evaporate. And so when that sweat can't evaporate off your body, your temperature, internal temperature, goes up and up and up because until you go, your body goes through evaporative cooling, the sweat on your skin evaporates through the air. That's when you cool. That's why your body's sweating. And so when it's really humid, you can't do that. And that's when it gets you into that danger zone. You feel that in a room. You ever go into a party or a house and there's a lot of people in there, or you start to get more and more, and all of a sudden you start to feel warm? It's because everybody's cool. Their body's cooling by sweating. Now the room's becoming humid, and it just clings to you. Not that it's dripping off your body like you've been swimming, but you're just not cooling right. So, and if you go back to like why this is happening, pre-industrial levels, there were probably in the 1800s about 1 billion people, and so from that time period to today, we now have over 8 billion people. Well, of course, there's more. Human caused issues. I mean, there's demand on energy. There's demand on products. Everybody drives. So everybody has heating and cooling that's causing issues. Everybody eats meat. Methane from there's kind of been jokes about get rid of the cows or whatever. But it is a serious thing. There's methane being produced by things like that. So all of these things are happening. So when you look back at, is it really happening, or is the sun just, it's people. There's so many of us. So that's not a bad thing. We just have to figure out how to protect us all going forward. And that's kind of the climate adaptation. Thank you. That's one thing we focus on, is adapting. So you have to adapt first to what's going on, especially here in Florida, where we're ground zero as much as anybody, right at sea level, a subtropical climate. So we have to adapt and then figure out what we can do going forward. And there are lots of things people, everybody can chip in a little and do, and it has a collective impact.
Have you already talked about how our state legislature is adapting by prohibiting water breaks?
Yes, I think that's
important.
Yeah. Well, okay, so I don't like to get political because I just don't want to cause that divide, because there are a lot of people that love our political people, and probably the same amount of people hate them. So, but what's important is that we give a voice and we care. So if what you said happens, that they hear about it from enough people. And I don't care if it's a Sarasota, you know, commissioner or a governor or a congressman, president, whatever. You have to give it a voice. You have to talk about it. And we have to get to a place where you're not scared to talk about it. Who you vote for is a whole different thing. But just that you care. These are issues. And you're educated. And also, when you're educated, you have less anxiety and fear because you're very well aware what's going on and what we can do. And that right there calms you and helps you think more clearly.
So whenever I walk past my air conditioning unit outside the house...
You bow to it, first of all. Thank you.
I feel the heat that is emanating from the air conditioning unit.
Yeah.
And one of the points that a speaker made at the climate conference last week was that hurricanes knock out power for a week or more, and that is a heat exposure emergency for people who do not have air conditioning when the power is out.
It really is, and that's definitely a concern. And you know, this tends to happen, they say, kind of disproportionately too, in communities that don't have as much wealth and resources around them. So it's not always a fair way that happens too. But yeah, so that's one of our biggest concerns. Bob Bunting, our CEO, always talks about that. If we get hit with a major hurricane and people are left without power for days, maybe a week or more, you know, that absolutely would trigger the concern for heat issues and potentially, you know, unfortunate deaths in that situation because people don't always know when they're in trouble.
That's a good point, Julie. We tend to think of people in Chicago and Minneapolis not having air conditioning, and we're cutting in and out here. And yet, if the power goes out in Sarasota, then people are exposed to those same problematic heat levels. So we have about 20 minutes left. I just talked to Jesse. I left Studio A and checked in. We're about 3 donations short of hitting that $1,000 bonus goal. So if 3 of you could call in, and again, if 3 of you could call in, make a donation in the next 15 minutes, that would be great.
Okay.
Yeah, do it for an old TV weatherman here. Come on.
Yeah, we have an anonymous contribution of $120, and Anonymous created a T-shirt as well, got a T-shirt as well. And then we have another contribution from Gordon Galbraith at the $40 listener level, and Gordon quotes factual news, electric music, perfect for this guy using the app and good headphones. And then the Jones Family Foundation made a $100 contribution in support of the Peace and Justice Report. And also an anonymous contribution of 96.5, which is our call letters at WSLR, and they're supporting radio activist and love everything.
Okay, attention listeners. I just got this from Jesse. Today is the final day of our membership drive, and we have an incredible opportunity to amplify our impact. Our amazing board of directors has stepped up in a big way with a $10,000 matching challenge. That's right. Every dollar you donate today will be matched dollar for dollar up to $10,000. But here's the catch. The challenge ends at 1 a.m. tonight after Lumpy Tunes. That means we only have until the end of the day to raise $10,000 and unlock the full match. So your $25 donation would become $50, your $100 gift becomes $200. You can do the math. So together we can raise $20,000 to power WSLR and Fogartyville's mission of independent media, creative expression, and community connection. So don't wait. Let's finish this drive strong and show the strength of our incredible community. Donate now at WSLR.org or call us at 941-894-6469. Every dollar counts. The clock is ticking. And that number, once again, 941-894-6469.
So let's dig in a little deeper on the migration issues. People who had a bad experience in Helene and Milton are moving inland. Is that right?
Yeah. So, you know, and I don't want to confuse migration with what's happening at our borders, but even at the borders, we don't know. I mean, there could be a percentage of that is climate-related. People, you know, they have hurricanes that take out everything they've ever known in Honduras, for example. And so maybe some of those people are coming up. I don't know. But as far as climate migration, people, you know, there are people right now that lots of people that have put their property up for sale on our barrier islands. So, and that's because they're done with it. I mean, they're in tears. They or they're forced financially. You know, I mean, if you simply, you know, rip down your drywall, fix it, dry everything out, and you're just reacting and you're just waiting for the next storm. You're not over it. We're not safe now. So it's an increasing threat as we go into our future. And so, you know, you have to, what you really have to do is to adapt your home. So when you fix it, you try to go higher. You try to there are different things, you know, maybe you can do. But for most, that's not a really good avenue because they may not have the funds to do that. It's hard to go higher with your home. So I think the Barrier Islands end up probably becoming even more, you know, affluent than they are. I mean, a lot of people have, you know, incredible places because the home has been in a family or they've had it for a long time, and it's such an incredible thing. But when these things hit you time after time, it can be really difficult to recover from, and they're seeing that. So they're migrating. They're probably either migrating inland in state, or some are going out of Florida. You know, not only do we have the hurricanes, but we have the intense heat, and it's tough. It's tough. I'm kind of a weirdo. I kind of like the heat, but it can get to a dangerous level, and that's when it's concerning. You know, we really got to be careful with that.
Yeah, I think it's we're going to see a situation where if we have more frequent storms, that it's going to be a lot harder for people to tolerate repairing their house if they're doing it every 5 years than if they're doing it every 25 years.
Yeah, and it doesn't even make sense because, you know, at some point you have to either believe or not believe what we think is going to happen. And if we expect more and more extreme weather events, so it could be a drought too. But, you know, last year was a drought, right? This year it was extreme precipitation. You know, we had, remember the flooding on like Tamiami and all the neighborhoods, and that unnamed wasn't even an official tropical storm, but earlier in the summer, incredible. We've never seen anything like this. So these, we expect extreme events to continue. It could be a drought one year, it could be incredible rainfall the next. And that depends a lot on El Nino, La Nina, what upper level wind patterns are doing. You could have even freaky cold air come down, and that doesn't mean that the climate's not warming as a whole for the planet. You're going to have variable weird weather things happen. And so what happens is when you have a warming climate, it throws everything out of its normal pattern, and that's what we're seeing. So people are migrating inward to higher land. That's a smart move. If you can stay on the Barrier Islands, it would be great to adapt if you can to protect yourself, because, you know, it does affect insurance rates, and everybody kind of pays that cost. But, you know, so maybe you migrate inland, and maybe you migrate north, maybe you migrate out of the state into the rest of the country farther north. There are lots of issues like that. And then, as I said, we continue to see people move here, you know, and legal migrants because of climate issues where they're from.
Yeah.
You know, and then you maybe see refugees as well doing that for the same reason, as I said, because they've lost everything maybe in some of those other countries.
Well, we know people that have left Sarasota and moved to Asheville. And
I know, isn't that crazy?
And maybe they're going to be moving back. They had
I got to tell you a story about that real quick. So we had a doctor tell us at the Climate Adaptation Center conference on human health. This is at USF Sarasota Manatee campus, by the way. Beautiful. I love that campus. Dr. Holbrook there, Karen Holbrook's amazing. But so anyway, we were there, and this doctor said that one thing we need to learn too from some of these issues, from these climate warmed themes we're seeing, is we can't put all of our eggs in one basket. So the IV fluids were all produced in Puerto Rico once upon a time, and they got hit that year by hurricanes so many times. Yeah, that was the big one. Yeah, yeah. That they decided to move it,
uh-huh.
And they moved it to Asheville, North Carolina.
Bingo.
And we still have an IV fluid shortage right now. So the doctors were telling me that non-essential surgeries, and that doesn't mean they're not important, but they're not allowed to order IV fluid for those. So they're having to delay all of these surgeries that people want to need. And that's stressing those people out, because I'm not talking about getting Botox or a facelift. I'm talking about surgeries that people need, right, but they're not essential. They're not life-threatening. And right now, those are the surgeries that are getting through with IV fluid. So that's something, you know, we need to learn from these climate issues and definitely spread things like that out. We should not be, you know, producing fluid in just one place. It's just not smart. And maybe it's something we do in other countries. I don't know. We just got to learn from these things. And just like when we have these hurricanes here, we have to learn from that. When we see record heat, we have to learn from our development. You know, are more 18-story condos a good thing? Can they be done in a way that, you know, has a climate screen? That's one thing we talk about all the time. Everything we do should go through a climate screen to make sure that it's being done. You think about our wastewater treatment, our water treatment in general. Is it sized for today's population and expected weather? Obviously no, because we continue to see really, really tough issues with this water when it comes down in extreme cases like that. So these are things but, you know, for our leaders to think about those things first for our community, you have to show them you care. And they have to know that has to be. And you know, it's just something that people, if they talk loud about it enough, I think we're more likely to get the right kinds of decisions from our leaders. And so many of our leaders, absolutely, they come to our events, they care and educated, but it's, you know how government is, it's not one person. So it's a collective, team of people that make decisions, and it's very complicated. But I think it starts when you care and people know you care.
Yeah, there's so many unintended consequences. You live in a condo, you're on the eighth floor, you've got hurricane-resistant glass, everything should be fine, and then there's a power failure. If that generator's not working, now you have to use the stairs. And do you have sufficient fuel for the generator? Do you have a backup generator? All too frequently, people will buy the same model generator and put it in the same location. So if it fails for a mechanical reason or due to flooding, then they're both out. So it takes a lot of anticipatory design work to try and anticipate all the ways things can run off the rails when the unusual happens.
So let's dig in a little bit more on the disease vectors, the tropical diseases that are showing up in the South United States. My sister lives in Albuquerque, and she is alarmed that the Aedes aegypti mosquitoes.
Wow, you said that so well. I had to memorize that for the conference.
Yeah. Those mosquitoes are showing up in her town, which is a mile high,
yep,
in dry New Mexico.
Yep, so increased habitats, okay, and that's a northern movement and mm-hmm. also an altitude movement. Mm-hmm. So latitude and altitude. And so that's what's wild. And you say, well, I'm sitting over here in Sarasota. I feel bad for her, but you know, we've got mosquito heaven here, so that doesn't, but it does affect us because our season is expanding and their reproduction cycles are increasing. So that means we are even going to be dealing with more mosquitoes. And then, you know, what are the chances that you get that lucky bite from one that maybe is carrying one of these vector-borne diseases? That chance is going to increase because the pathogens, the parasites inside them, their reproduction, they're more active. They become more impactful as the weather warms. So it really is incredible that what we're seeing. And I forget the exact number, but I think twice the amount of people are going to be impacted by like dengue fever by the end of the decade than are right now. I mean, so it really is expanding. And this is another adaptation thing. So we can't control that. I mean, we can try to slow down our climate warming, but that's going to take a while. But we have to do it, and we have to get on this. But, you know, we have to adapt to this mosquito threat. And so, you know, we need to make sure our decision makers are handling that properly? Are we doing enough mosquito sampling to know what the threat is out there? Are we doing mosquito control properly? Are we ourselves helping out the situation by making sure we don't have much standing water around, you know, our homes? You know, because mosquitoes love water. And so when water sources get scarce in some places like Albuquerque, you know, especially in third world countries, sometimes when there's a drought, water sources get scarce. So guess what happens? The humans and the mosquitoes both get attracted to the water, move closer to the water, and that causes a problem. So, wow, we could really stay here till midnight tonight talking about the billion things we can't even imagine that are impacted.
Well, and I can remember when these tropical disease issues were theoretical threats. People would say, well, if it keeps getting warmer, then we're going to have issues. And now they're here, and it's happening. And it's apparently the number of counties where these are reported is increasing.
Yeah.
Yeah, there have been cases of dengue reported in Hillsborough County.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember, is it Manatee County, Sarasota County? I don't know.
Yeah, and malaria. Now, malaria hasn't been an issue this year, but I think this is interesting. The state of Florida last year had 8 or 9 malaria cases, and they were all in Sarasota County.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
But ground zero.
Mm-hmm.
I should make T-shirts up, ground zero, because I just want people to remember we are there as much as anybody. So I always thought that Sarasota would be a great world example for adaptation. If the city, you know, they build a new park, like over here in the Rosemary District, we got a new little park, right? The little white concrete park with some trees in it.
Yeah.
And walking by, I was like, that's so beautiful. And I looked at it a little more, and it is a great addition to the neighborhood. But I was like, wouldn't it be nice if that concrete was like a porous surface that would absorb heavy rain, and
mm-hmm.
and then if we put certain trees in there that were carbon sequestering trees, like not like a palm tree does a little, not a lot. We love our palm trees
mm-hmm.
so much, and I don't want them to ever go away, but we need to add more trees that are really heavy carbon, you know, sequestering, like an oak tree or whatever. But I just think we could do little things like this and celebrate climate warming, because we can't stop it. It's happening, you know. We got a future where we got to slow it down, but it's here, and I think we're ground zero. And I think we could be this incredible world example for how to adapt and thrive, because we can do all of this, but we have to do it right. We have to quit, you know, reacting to everything and be proactive, and that's what I'd like to see. But I think for that to happen is, you know, people, the decision makers need to know this is a big deal to us. And wouldn't that be cool if we were the world example for this incredible community that has thrived with climate warming at a ground zero?
So, Rick, if people want to get in touch with the Climate Adaptation Center, how do they do that?
Yeah, so we are, and I hate to talk about a nonprofit right now because I know you guys are in the dry, but we are a nonprofit. So we do not take any political money. And you can see I really stay away from politics, because I just don't want this to be a political issue. But the Climate Adaptation Center is in Sarasota. And one thing, I know it's hard to get sources that you can trust, so we really pride ourselves on being in the community. I'm in Manatee County. Bob Bunting, our CEO, is in downtown Sarasota. We give presentations. We're everywhere. We have these events. So we just want to be a local source that talks about climate with local impacts to you in a way you can trust. And if you go to our website, climateadaptationcenter.org. It's a really easy website. Yeah, that's my email too. It's like,
oh my gosh,
I have to get my email, rickkirby@theclimateadaptationcenter.org. So climateadaptationcenter.org. And that's our website, and there you can get incredible articles. We have a whole library of things we've written with local impacts. How are we doing on time here?
We have another contribution to acknowledge. This is from John Dickman. He pledges $25 to the Peace and Justice Report, $25 to Healthy Living Hour, and $25 to Daddy-O Collector's Corner, totaling a $75 contribution.
And I've got some news. We got the 3 additional calls, and so we made the $1,000 match with the 30 calls in that time period. And so it's
how about that?
On to the $10,000.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's our website. You can go there and learn more, and we have memberships, and you can make donations there as well. But thank you.
Thank you so much, Rick, for joining us today. You've been listening to the Healthy Living Hour, hosted by Rebecca Acosta on listener-supported WSLR LP Radio 96.5 FM and WBPV LP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from our downtown Sarasota studios on Kumquat Court.
Today's show featured meteorologist Rick Kirby, senior scientist at the Climate Adaptation Center. Rebecca was also joined by the hosts of our Changing Environment, Julie Morris and John O'Miller.
Previous shows of the Healthy Living Hour may be accessed at WSLR Archives. Go to archive.wslr.org.
And tune in at 9 next week on November 25th for the next broadcast of Our Changing Environment.
Rebecca Acosta and the Healthy Living Hour will be back on December 2nd.
This is the final day of our fall membership drive. It's easy to become a member by calling in at 941-894-6469. That's 941-894-6469.
If you don't want to call, you can join online at WSLR.org.
And don't forget to check out the live music, public affairs, and other special events at Fogartyville online.